joining me here on this Monday, March 19th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 15, hour and 20 or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we kick off a new week here on Bang the Book Radio. I'll answer your questions in the Monday mailbag segment to kick things off for this week. And then second half of today's show, probably second two-thirds, I guess I would say, of this show, Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com will join us for our handicapping the hardwood segment. We'll talk NIT, CBI, CIT with games coming up in those three tournaments here over the next 3 days. Also look ahead to the Sweet 16, recap what we saw on a crazy weekend of March Madness, all that good stuff as we go throughout the program here today. Over at bangthebook.com, lots of fantastic content for you, some of it that I've written here this morning. I wrote up a piece with some late regular season NHL betting tips, so you can check that out over there. We don't want to forget about the other markets that are going on here at this time of the year. Also, my MLB betting guide, still available for download. You can also purchase it on Amazon if you're so inclined. But you can get that in PDF form over at bangthebook.com. 30 season win totals, World Series, AL and NL pennant, then also the Home Run King, futures bets there, a glossary with statistics that I like to use. Lots of good stuff in that guide, 228 pages of baseball betting information. So you can check that out over there at the website. Also, I'll be doing some Cy Young and MVP stuff here over the next couple of weeks as we get a clearer picture of who's healthy and who's not. And again, keep in mind here, I talked about this on last week's show, and I'll do it here again this week. Those injuries that are popping up now, obliques, lat strains, wrist soreness, elbow soreness, all these types of things here that don't just put opening day in jeopardy, but some of these things can be month-long or six-week-long things now at this time of the year, especially if you're talking about pitchers. So keep that in mind as you're looking to lock in some of those season win total bets. We'll talk some baseball with Brian Leonard on Wednesday this week on Bang the Book Radio. So we'll get some more baseball stuff in there. But I just want to throw that out there for our listeners that are starting to pay attention now. You know, the regulars are playing back-to-back days, 3 out of 4 days. Relievers are working back-to-back days, stuff like that. We are getting closer to the season here. The season starting March 29th for everybody. First time in, I think, 50 years that opening day has been the same for everyone. So, hey, we're right around the corner from the start of baseball season. So check out that guide that I have over there at bangthebook.com. We also have daily NHL picks from Parker Michaels every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We get NBA picks from Doug Carson. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I write up the How to Bet piece. I will have some Corey Pabst articles for the betting markets for the Sweet 16 games coming up here on Thursday and Friday. Two golf events this week. I'll preview both of them. NASCAR still going on. I think UFC is actually on a little bit of a break for the next couple of weeks. If not, I'll have a preview up for that, but I haven't even looked at the calendar for UFC thus far. But we have everything going on over at bangthebook.com. Our free pick contests, free pick videos, matchup data section, betting trends, sportsbook reviews, all that great stuff. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Don't forget about that promo code over at DSI Sportsbook, BANG200, 100% for the 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. Again, using that promo code BANG200. Got a bunch of listener questions here for this week in the Monday mailbag. If you didn't get your question in for this week, you can always hit me up on Twitter at Skating Tripods, or you can hit me up via email, adam@bangthebook.com. And I will continue the Monday mailbag when I do my betters box segments. I guess I might as well do that before I get into the Monday mailbag here. So I'm going to do all 5 shows this week. I originally thought to myself, well, I'll do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. But as I was looking at the breakdown for the Sweet 16 games, they don't start until 7 o'clock Eastern time on Thursday. So we'll just go ahead and do our regular show on Thursday, assuming Brad Powers and Ralph Michaels can make it if they don't have other plans or other things that they need to tend to. So we'll do regular shows here this week. Friday's show will be pre-recorded. I've got something going on Friday morning, so I'm going to pre-record that on Thursday. And then next week, we'll do shows Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, our regular traditional shows with our traditional guests. Friday, I will do my first installment of the Bettors Box. That's my MLB betting podcast. And then coming up the following week, I'll do one on Tuesday and then also on Thursday. Then after that, we'll go Monday, Thursday with the Bettors Box. So next week is the last week that we'll do our traditional daily format with all the guests that we've had for the month of April. I'll be doing the Bettors Box on Monday and Thursday. I usually wrap for about a half hour, 45 minutes, something like that, with that show, giving you some baseball betting insight and analysis, give you my top play for the night. then also some of the things that I'm looking at in terms of future games that are coming up down the line. But I'll do that on Mondays and Thursdays throughout April. We may do some one-off Tuesday shows. I like to do the Tuesday takeover over the summer, so maybe we'll do one with Joe Everett as the NFL draft gets closer, you know, Brad Powers as we get closer to college football season win totals, stuff like that. But we'll do we'll catch our breath a little bit here in the month of April and just do those Bettors Box shows Mondays and Thursdays. Again, I will do the Monday mailbag. So if you've got questions that aren't baseball related, please shoot them over for that Monday mailbag segment. But then, you know, we'll do some stuff as we go throughout May, June, and July. You know, there's really just not a whole lot going on. You've got the NBA and NHL playoffs. You've got the Major League Baseball season. We don't do a whole lot with soccer here on the shows because, quite frankly, I don't know a whole lot about it. And we just, you know, don't really have a lot of guests that are in tune with the soccer markets. So, you know, just kind of give you a little bit of an idea of what we're going to be doing here going forward. But what's most important for you is that we're doing 5 shows this week, every day, our regular format, and then 4 shows next week, and then the Bettors Box on Friday, and then we'll go from there as we go on in to the month of April. So in any event, make sure you hit me up with those listener questions at Skating Tripods on Twitter or adam@bangthebook.com. A lot of these questions overlapping here, but I do want to start with a very interesting question from @SecretSpy73, David, a regular listener of the show, and says, here's a mailbag question for tomorrow. How to come down from 4 straight days of all this basketball? That's a fantastic question, to be honest with you, because, you know, now you've got that betting itch. You've got that mindset. You want that action, and you got to be careful. You know, coming down from maybe you had a very good weekend with March Madness, maybe you didn't. You know, you want to make sure that you're not chasing your losses, that you're not throwing away the profits that you've made. You know, get back to the basics. Get back to the nuts and bolts. Look at the NBA card tonight. See if there's anything that you like. NHL cards, same thing. We'll talk a little bit about some of the college basketball games that are up there for tonight in the NIT and the CBI and CIT. But, you know, again, you want to make sure that now you're getting back to the normal grind. You know, March Madness is a different type of animal because it's such a, you know, premier event. It's got, you know, lots of very high betting handles that are out there, lots of line moves, lots of significant live betting opportunities, which is something that I took advantage of over the course of the last 4 days. And now you kind of get back into, you know, the things that you just traditionally do. I mean, you know, don't go out there and bet derivatives if you're not paying attention to the games. You know, everyone's watching March Madness. If tonight you're, you know, remembering that your wife exists or remembering that your husband or boyfriend exists, whatever the case may be, you know, don't bet those derivatives. If you're not paying attention to Stanford and Oklahoma State or LSU and Utah or Washington and St. Mary's, you know, maybe you're catching up on sleep. Maybe you're detoxing after, you know, getting together with the boys or the girls for March Madness and then St. Patrick's Day last weekend. You know, just, again, maintain a proper mindset. Use your willpower. Don't go overboard. You know, tonight, New Orleans and Campbell, Sam Houston State, Central Arkansas, these are teams that are not Utah Valley. These are teams that are not regularly lined. You know, we've got only a few data points from these teams based on the games that they've played in these postseason tournaments and maybe, you know, some early season non-conference stuff. Be careful. Tread lightly. If you lost money last weekend, and I'm sure a lot of people did with some of the crazy results that we saw, you lost money. It happens. You know, you don't want to go chasing now with, you know, matchups that you're uncomfortable with or chasing in the NBA or the NHL markets when you haven't been paying too much attention to them. So, look, you know what? If you want to take the Monday off, if you want to recover, you know, after like a heavy night of drinking, rehydrate, get back into the right mindset here for Tuesday and Wednesday. Look at those futures that you've got still pending out there. Look at the lines that are out there for these Sweet 16 matchups. You know, it's not a bad thing to take a day or two off here now and sort of re-energize yourself for the games that are coming up on Thursday and Friday. So I think it's a really excellent question. Something that we don't really think about too much here, you know, because we just think about this being a daily grind. But when it's something like March Madness, where it's 4 days of all day basketball, that's all you're paying attention to, not a bad time to take a step back, you know, unless you really find something that you absolutely like. And, you know, it may be tough to do here tonight with a limited number of games across all of the markets here. Lots of questions about hedging this week. Let's start with one for the NBA, though, because I got an NBA hedging question from Ezra, who emailed me, adam@bangthebook.com. Says, looking forward to the NBA championships. It looks likely that the final series will be between the Raptors and either the Warriors or the Rockets. Therefore, Do you think it makes sense to buy a futures position on the Raptors at 12-1 now, and then use that value to hedge back on the West? It's a really good question, because when you look at the Eastern Conference right now for the NBA, and some breaking news here right before the start of the show that Tyronn Lue, the head coach of the Cavaliers, taking a step back. He's got some health problems that he's trying to focus on. So assistant coach Larry Drew taking over the team. So the Cavs are kind of in a bit of a state of flux. They're still not playing a whole lot of defense, obviously. And then you've got the Celtics, who are kind of, I don't really know what to think of the Celtics at this point. Is Brad Stevens just really trying to make sure that his team gets to the postseason healthy? Kyrie Irving's had the knee problems. Gordon Hayward's still out with that horrible injury that none of us can forget. Brad Stevens maybe just kind of trying to, pace his team a little bit here. The Raptors, they look fantastic, and they've been fantastic throughout the year. Top five team in offensive and defensive efficiency for a large part of the season. They do look like the team to beat in the East right now. So you do have to start wondering to yourself, what that futures price may look like for Toronto versus Golden State or Toronto versus Houston. Again, I don't think that Toronto is a given in the Eastern Conference. They certainly look like the likely team to emerge, but it's hard to bet against LeBron James when you get into April and May. I mean, how many straight finals has that guy been to? Like 23 of them, something like that. So it's hard to bet against him when you get to the Eastern Conference playoffs and when things, really step up. I mean, the Cavs sort of seem to be resigned to the fact that they're going to finish somewhere in the 3-5 range, 3-6 range, something like that. Maybe they kind of flipped that switch a little bit. Honestly, I don't know if they care that much right now where they finish. I think LeBron is perfectly content going on the road if he has to in the playoffs. I think LeBron is perfectly fine with, getting Kevin Love back and having the personnel in play. So, obviously the Raptors are not a given in the Eastern Conference, but it's not a bad idea to start thinking about something like this in terms of looking at them. And you want to sort of speculate what that, Warriors, Rockets versus Raptors price would look like. And keep in mind here too, the Raptors are going to have a challenging path to the NBA Finals if they are the team that emerges from the East, and they have some playoff demons to slay before they get there. But the Western Conference playoffs are going to be very interesting. Houston is the best team in the West as far as I'm concerned right now, with the Warriors dealing with some injuries. And, as a listener pointed out to me last week, I keep saying that last year the Warriors won 73 was actually 2 years ago. So thank you to Daniel for pointing that out to me. But, it's going to be a bear for whoever gets through the Western Conference. And if you get that Rockets versus Warriors Western Conference final, that's a hell of a series. That is a fantastic series. The winner of that one will certainly earn it. So, it's not like Golden State's going to waltz to the finals, like they have in previous years. They have to contend with the Rockets, teams that are in the 3-6, 3-8 range out there in the West. Utah is no picnic, especially when you got to go play in altitude with the defense that they play. Minnesota is a team that's got some upside, especially if Jimmy Butler can make it back. Portland may be the hottest team in the NBA right now with how well they're playing. San Antonio, we'll see about their injury situations with LaMarcus Aldridge banged up, seemingly day after day, then Kawhi Leonard and the fact that he's been out. But, that's a team that's going to be a tough out for somebody in the playoffs with how good of a coach Greg Popovich is, how well they play defense down there in San Antonio. The Western Conference playoffs are a big-time challenge this year. It will be one of the Rockets and Warriors, I have to think. But, that is one thing that could potentially help out the Eastern Conference champ is that, the West is not as easy of a path as it used to be. So I think there are some opportunities out there. And if you think the Warriors at 12-1 are that team, yeah, you could certainly look to take, a position there with that. The thing about taking any Eastern Conference team, though, is that your hedging margin is very small leading up to the NBA Finals, because you're going to have to pay -350, -300, -350, maybe even -400, something like that on the Warriors or the Rockets against the Raptors. And it could even be higher than that, depending on how all those teams look going throughout the playoffs. So that's the one concern that I would have when it comes to buying an Eastern Conference team, is that not only do they have to find a way to get there, but also you may not have a ton of hedging margin on the path to get to that point. So I do think from a value standpoint, the Raptors, if you can find them at a 12-1 price with how good they are on both ends of the floor, there's probably some value in making that investment. But you have to consider the fact that it's very hard for you to do anything in the Eastern Conference playoffs because you'll have to pay such a big price there once you get to the NBA Finals. So that would be my cautionary tale there with that. But I do think that's a good question from Ezra, and I think, you know, we'll try to do a little bit more NBA stuff here over the next couple of weeks while we're doing the daily shows. So, all right, let's get back over to the college basketball side of things here, and lots of questions sort of pertaining to the same types of things here. And I'll start with this one from at Big Mitch Show, who DM'd us at Bang the Book. So you can also do that if you want to get your Monday mailbag questions to me. Says, hi, Adam, big fan of the show. Thank you so much for that. Sitting on Syracuse at 500-1. I was wondering if you think it would be worth it to lay a huge price on Duke on Friday. I think I should start eating into that price, but Duke is probably going to be at least like -800. They are an 11-point favorite. So that is a very, very big number here for Duke on the money line this weekend. But since he's hoping to get some advice on that and then has a second follow-up question, with 500-1, you have to hedge into Syracuse at this point. You just have to do. If you want to guarantee some profit out of that investment, you have to do it. Now, of course, the amount that you want to lay on Duke is going to be contingent on what your initial investment is with Syracuse. You know, if you've got $5 to win $2,500, $10 to win $5,000, you know, whatever the case may be, and this is true of all of the futures questions that everybody asked me here this week, I'll just sort of give a broad brush answer here. Get the number in your mind at this point that you want to get out of this bet. Do you want to get 5 units out of your futures play now that we've reached the Sweet 16? I certainly think that that's a pretty reasonable number to look at. So now with a team like Syracuse, you know, if you have to lay that significant price on Duke to get 5 units of profit out of it, well, you know, what kind of units are you talking about? Are you talking about the futures unit that you played, or are you talking about a standard bet amount? If you put $5 on Syracuse, but you're a $100 better, it's going to be hard to get 5 units of profit out of, you know, a Duke bet. Maybe you look for 2.5 units of profit. Maybe you look for 3 units of profit, something like that. But that's the number that you want to put in your mind, is I want to get this much out of this bet. And you also have to consider, too, with something like Syracuse, and this is why Syracuse is such a difficult one and such a challenging answer, is that they're a pretty significant dog to Kansas, too. Probably not to the effect of Duke, because we've seen Duke beat them by 16 here so far this year, and we've seen Duke, you know, have success with that zone defense in the past. And also, Duke knows about that zone defense. Duke is familiar with that zone defense. TCU, not so much. Michigan State, you know, they've played it in the past, but certainly, you know, maybe once a year in a non-conference game or an NCAA tournament, something like that. And Michigan State just missed shots. They missed like 14 straight shots in that game. Syracuse got badly out-rebounded, and Michigan State just didn't make shots. And that's how it goes sometimes in this one-and-done format. So, you know, for Syracuse here, they're deservedly a big dog in this spot. So, yeah, if you want to get some profit out of that 500-1, now is the time to do it. They're very likely to lose to Duke, as the line would suggest. So get that number in your mind. I want to make 3 units of profit. Okay, well, whatever the Duke money line winds up being, that's what you have to do. You know, that's exactly the route that you want to look to take there. And as I'm looking now, I see that Five Dimes at -750. So again, that's a significant investment. You know, if you're $100 better, obviously you have to bet 750 to win 1 unit. And a lot of people just don't have the bankroll capacity to do that. Now, what you can do, and this is something that I want to talk about here at this stage of the show, is that I was really pissed off at myself last week because I hedged pregame with St. Bonaventure against Florida. And that wound up being a wasted bet. Bonaventure kept it close for a while. Florida eventually pulled away, won that game by 15. Probably could have saved myself that play. And the reason why I hedged Florida, I had them 55-1 a couple weeks ago, then also 125-1 when the tournament draw came out. So because I had 2 positions on them, one of them being in triple digits, I threw a little bit on Bonaventure, +240, I think it was, +225. I think they closed +240. Threw a little bit on that one, but that was because I had Texas Tech and Purdue in that area. So that was the only reason I threw something on Florida. But I probably could have saved myself the money. One thing I started looking at, and I did this with Butler yesterday, and I also did it with UMBC yesterday against Kansas State because I had futures positions on Purdue and Kansas State, is that I played live. I made a live hedge in-game betting. And then, you know, because Kansas State was a 10-point favorite. If they go wire to wire in that game, if they're up by, you know, 8 to 10 throughout the game, I'm not going to look to make a play. I played UMBC when they got it down to 4 or 5 with a few minutes left in the game. And then that was the way that I looked to hedge that one. With Butler, you know, because I've got a couple positions on Purdue, and because Purdue has some depth issues now with the Isaac Haas injury, I took Butler plus 550. I think they were down 8 or something like that. Obviously, they cut it down to 2, lost by 3. That is something you can look to do. You can look to wait and then make a live hedge based on how the game appears to be going. So, for example here, instead of laying the minus 750 on Duke, you can risk that Syracuse keeps this game close, maybe has a little bit of a lead, maybe plays with a lead into halftime, and then you could play Duke at minus 400 or minus 450, something like that. The downside to that is North Carolina. I had North Carolina at 33-1. Texas A&M, with almost a wire-to-wire job, blew them out. Clearly the better team in that game. I never had a chance to hedge that North Carolina position 33-1 at all whatsoever. That wound up being a loser for me. And that's something that happens, you know, because I don't want to hedge a 33-1 in the round of 32 when North Carolina is a clear favorite like they were. But they couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. Texas A&M played a phenomenal game. It happens. You know, those are things that do happen. So you kind of have both sides of the coin there. You know, I pissed away a bet amount on Bonaventure, didn't make a play on North Carolina, or didn't make a play on A&M, I should say, when I very easily could have. You know, I could have taken a small position on their money line, plus 250, plus 275, whatever it was, didn't do it, got burned. Did it with Bonaventure, got burned. So this is something you want to consider here from a future standpoint with all of the remaining teams that are out there is, do I want to take this position pregame, or do I want to look for a better number in-game? And I think that's one of those things where, you know, you start looking at some of these teams that people have reached out to me about, West Virginia, Kansas State, you know, should I hedge my Kentucky position? I wouldn't hedge a Kentucky position, at least not pregame. I would look for an in-game opportunity to look to hedge Kentucky if you want to. If Kentucky comes out, and look, Kansas State, you know, looked bad against UMBC. Defensively, they played fine. Offensively, they were a train wreck. And Kentucky, when they play defense, they're a pretty good team. And what they did to Buffalo was very impressive. Buffalo may have hit the wall a little bit. But I don't think that you need to rush and play Kansas State pregame. I think you wait and see. Kentucky may dictate this game from start to finish. It's in Atlanta, a, you know, an area that they're familiar with down there in the Southeast. They get to, you know, come back from Boise, an area that they weren't familiar with. This is something where I wouldn't hedge Kentucky pregame. Kansas State is not going to run away and hide the way that Texas A&M did in North Carolina. Texas A&M was a very high upside team. They were a top five team in the AP poll earlier on in the year. Had some suspensions, had some injuries, struggled in the middle part of the year. That was a damn good basketball team that North Carolina lost to yesterday. Kansas State is not a damn good basketball team. Kansas State is a quality basketball team. They're not going to run and hide from Kentucky. At least I don't think so. I'd be very, 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 very shocked if they did. So I wouldn't hedge a Kentucky position pregame. I wouldn't bother with it. I would look to see if I want to hedge live. If Kansas State looks like they're hanging around, if Kentucky gets into foul trouble, something like that, then you can look to make a Kansas State play. And I don't think you're going to lose too much line value in the process because Kentucky's favored. Kentucky will be favored live throughout the game unless they get down to a big deficit. You can get the current money line that's out there or better by simply waiting throughout the course of the game. If you've got a favorite, that's the way that I would look to play it here this week. Same thing with Kansas. I wouldn't hedge a Kansas future pregame. For one thing, you know, they're 3 hours from home in Omaha again, as I talked about on last week's shows where they got a very favorable draw. I'm not hedging Kansas pregame if I've got that position, and I don't, but I'm not hedging it pregame. I'm just not going to do it. You know, Clemson shot the lights out in that win over Auburn by 31 points. A lot of people expected Clemson to be done in that 12-5 game, expected New Mexico State to beat them. Brad Brownell's team has played very well here in this tournament so far. But Kansas's problem is on the defensive end in that they don't really play any. Clemson, outside the top 40 in offensive efficiency, a good defensive team. But again, they're not a team that's going to run and hide. They're not a team that's going to, you know, put you in a position where you're laying a minus money price on the money line for Clemson in order to hedge your Kansas position. So I would just let it go until the game gets underway. When you've got a favorite in that type of role, same thing with Gonzaga. I would not touch a Gonzaga future pregame. I would only look for opportunities if I feel like I need to during the game to take Florida State. I think Mark Few coaches circles around Leonard Hamilton in that game, which is just one angle that I'm looking at there in that one. Gonzaga also stays out on the West Coast. But, you know, there's no reason to cut into that Gonzaga future if you don't need to. And that's what I did with that four to play with Bonaventure. That was the mistake that I made. You know, you can look for some live opportunities. If you've got the team that's in the favorite role going into it and they should take care of business, why panic? Why risk it? You know, look for a live opportunity where, like I said, you could probably get the same or better of a hedging price in that particular game. Now, you've got a different situation here as it pertains to West Virginia, because West Virginia is an underdog to Villanova in this one. That one right now looking like it's about Villanova minus five out there. I don't see a number market-wide in the offshore, but that's the number coming out of Vegas. And, you know, this is a very hard position to be in, because I think West Virginia presents some problems for Villanova in that they play that press Virginia defense. They were underseeded as a five. You know, they looked very good in their two games in their San Diego regional. If you've got a Villanova future, you know, it's hard. Yeah, I don't know what you do necessarily, because you've got them probably 6 or 8 to 1. You really don't want to hedge in the Sweet 16 with Villanova. You kind of have to wait and hope that they're a team that can take care of business here in this situation. Now, on the flip side, if you've got West Virginia, and several of our listeners do, they reached out to me at ALNow_gotem. Let's see, who else has got them here? A few listeners have West Virginia futures that they reached out to me about. And, you know, it's a tough spot to be in, because you've got this Villanova team who I think is the best in the country when they're healthy. They've got two blowout wins. When they started shooting the ball against Alabama, that thing just became a runaway. And Villanova's a very experienced team, very, very good guard play. They shoot the ball extremely well from distance. If they get some transition opportunities, and you can do that against West Virginia with that aggressive defense that they play, Villanova could run West Virginia out of the gym. Now, on the other hand, because of the style that West Virginia plays, they can get themselves some easy buckets. If you have to work hard against Villanova, and Villanova's not as good defensively as they have been, if you have to work hard against Villanova, it's a tough spot to be in. So for West Virginia here, if you've got a West Virginia future 40-1, something like that, I think I would probably look to pregame hedge that with Villanova. I think I would look to do it with that money line, about a 5-point favorite. So you're laying about $2 there on that Villanova money line, $2, $2.15, something like that. I think I would look to cut into it at that point. I think that that's a situation where you want to limit your risk as much as possible. If you want to roll the dice and wait for a lower Villanova price during the game, you can. I mean, Villanova started slow against Alabama. Villanova could very well start slow against West Virginia here as well, especially with that feeling out process of playing a team that plays such an unconventional style of defense. So maybe you can wait on Villanova. But if Villanova gets out to a 12-4 lead, something like that, you know, their money line price goes up into the $3 range, you may not get an opportunity to get as good of a price on Villanova as you could have pregame. So that's up to your risk management. That's up to your, you know, your bankroll management. It's up to your bankroll size. It's completely up to what you want to do there. I think personally, I would look to take a position on Villanova pregame, because it worries me that they could just run West Virginia off the floor. But West Virginia is a pretty good team too. So if you want to wait, you can also do that. And that's part of the problem. And one of the challenging things here about, you know, some of these listener questions, and I love these listener questions. I love talking about these things because they're so fascinating to me. But the hard part is, you know, every situation is unique. Every situation is different. Are you a gambler? Do you have that risk profile where you want to wait and see what you get in game? Or do you want to take the gamble out of it a little bit? Go ahead and take your pregame position, pick up your, if you gotta lay 6.6 units to win 2 units or something like that on a team like Villanova, you know, if you've got the bankroll capacity to do that, I would look to do that. But if you have a limited bankroll and you're kind of worried about, you know, laying some of these big money lines, then yeah, that's a situation where, you know, you have to weigh the risk reward of that. Now, here's the nice thing about those that have West Virginia futures. They're a dog to Villanova of about 5. They're probably a pick'em or close to it against either Texas Tech or Purdue, and they beat Texas Tech twice during the season. So for West Virginia, that's another consideration you have here, is that you can hedge this one knowing that it's a virtual coin flip game in the next round. As long as everyone's healthy and all that, it's a virtual coin flip game. So that's another consideration you have to make. You know, for Kansas here, let's go back to Kansas and Clemson. Kansas beats Clemson like they should. They're a virtual home team against Duke or Syracuse, probably Duke. You know, that's Duke's probably a favorite in that game, even with Kansas being a home team. So for Kansas, if you've got a Duke future, you can play the Kansas money line at plus money. You've got a Kansas future. Maybe you take the short Duke price. Maybe you wait to see what happens in that game. You always have to be thinking ahead with the futures. You know, Texas A&M is another one here. Texas A&M, one listener reached out, said he's got Texas A&M 100-1. Great grab. It's one I thought about. Didn't do it. Wish I would have, obviously. It would have made my North Carolina loss much, much more palatable. But that's one where, you know, Michigan in this tournament, 125 points offensively, struggled with Montana's defense, struggled with Houston's defense. Texas A&M, we saw what their defense did in North Carolina. So what do you want to do with that Texas A&M position? I think you have to hedge it. At the very least, you have to do something with it because you don't want to let 100-1 go by the wayside. But right now, Michigan's -3 out there. You know, it's a $1.60 hedge. You know, you can put, you know, 4 units on Michigan. It's not a bad thing. You know, it's not a bad thing to guarantee your profit there. On the other hand, you know, do you wait and see if you can get Michigan at even money or maybe plus money if Texas A&M starts out hot in this game? Certainly an opportunity. So that's something I think that I'm really glad to present here on today's show is that you have this choice now because of live betting. You have this opportunity to where you don't have to hedge pregame. Now, you run the risk of not getting a good hedging opportunity like we saw in that A&M game. But in a lot of these games here in March Madness where you're going to have a lot of close games, a lot of games that are very back and forth, we've seen remarkable runs each way here in this tournament, you're probably going to get that money line price or better over the course of the game. But that's up to you. That's up to your risk management. It's up to the fact, you know, can you stay up on Thursday night and watch that Florida State-Gonzaga game until 12:30 in the morning? You know, is that something you can do with your work schedule if you've got kids, whatever? You don't want to fall asleep on the couch watching the game and then not get the opportunity to hedge. So that's something else that you have to consider is, you know, am I going to be able to do this? Am I going to be awake? Am I going to remember to do it? All that stuff is very, very important for you. So I think there are a lot of opportunities to waiting to hedge until the game is going on and you can see how things are playing out and be like, you know what? I don't have to hedge Texas A&M here. They're the better team. You know, they're dominating on the interior. Michigan's not getting clean looks. I'm going to let this one ride a little bit longer, you know, because you can kick yourself. If you take a pregame position and Texas A&M goes out there and looks like the team that beat North Carolina by 21, you're going to be a little bit pissed off that you cut into your profit. You're going to know in the back of your mind, I did the smart thing. That was a team that was 100-1. I did the smart thing. I did what I should have done. But man, I wish I wouldn't have because I could have, you know, watched how the game was playing out and gotten a better number on Michigan. So that's the decision that you have to make here as we head into the Sweet 16. And you know, I was talking a lot with Kyle Hunter about it throughout the week when we were texting back and forth about the games. And, you know, that was something that really stood out to me is, you know, I did some things where, you know, maybe I shouldn't have. Maybe I was a little bit too premature with the hedge. Maybe I was too late with the hedge. And then that's something you're just going to have to live with here as we go throughout this tournament. But again, keep in mind here that, you know, you also have to consider the future ramifications of who plays who down the line. You know, if you've got something, like I said, with West Virginia, you probably want to hedge here against Villanova because you're going to have a coin flip game in the next game. So at that point, you know, you get a reasonable price to make a hedge or you can let it ride throughout the game, you know, see what you want to do live. There are so many considerations now that live betting opens up for us. And I think that's something that's really important to talk about here on today's show. As far as Purdue futures go, you know, I mentioned this already, but with the Isaac Haas injury, depth is a concern for Purdue. And if he's able to come back here for the Sweet 16, you know, you certainly want to wait and not do anything with Purdue until we find that out. But yeah, I mean, you may have hedged already against Butler. I know some people did. I took Butler in game, like I said, plus 550 as a hedge just to, you know, protect myself a little bit there. You know, also, you take into account, Purdue doesn't do well in this situation, getting to the Sweet 16 and beyond. And obviously, you know, we saw what Virginia did in the first round. So, you know, again, all these considerations, it's on a case-by-case basis. And, you know, the one thing I wanted to make sure that I introduced here today is that you can take some opportunities to look to hedge in-game as opposed to making that pre-game play. One guest here on this Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio, that is the great Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Doing really well, man. I know I've said this before, but I have to say it again, man. I love March Madness.
It is a fantastic tournament. And let's go ahead and talk about the Most interesting, most surprising thing that happened this weekend. Everyone's talking about it. You know we have to mention it here on the show. Rick Barnes and the Tennessee Volunteers losing to Loyola Chicago.
Yeah, I thought you were about to say UMBC winning a game, a 16 seed winning. But, hey, I think we should start with Rick Barnes, too. I think it's one of those spots where Tennessee, they did well for the season overall, based on their expectations. But the bracket set up well for them to make a little bit of a run. But, when you have a coach like Rick Barnes and he puts you in bad spots in key games like that, it was just destined to happen before it really should have. Tennessee, if you think about it now, Tennessee, this bracket would have opened up to where they really had a chance to make Final Four. As it is, Tennessee loses as a favorite and kind of blows their opportunity, and I don't think either you or I are very surprised about that.
No, we're really not. They got some help in the Wright State game in two ways. One, Loudon Love had two fouls early on in that one, and two, Wright State just looked really awful offensively. Here's the thing, though. So I know we like to kick around Rick Barnes, and obviously, I know some of our listeners have made a drinking game out of this, but let's also be honest here. Loyola Chicago's an 11, but they were a one-possession dog to Miami. They're virtually a one-possession dog to Tennessee in that game as well. This isn't some Cinderella story. This is a damn good basketball team. Now, the way that they've won their two games, both of them in buzzer-beater fashion, that's certainly impressive. And look, Rick Barnes has a hard enough time with SEC and Big 12 teams. He's not going to beat God and Sister Jean. So, it was just one of those things where everything's set up well for the Ramblers, but these aren't like overwhelming upsets. This is a damn good team.
Oh man. Yeah. You always catch me off guard with one like that. gotta love Sister Jean. Somebody that's that age that still is that into, basketball and is that much a part of the team, I think it's pretty neat. Rick Barnes and Tennessee, I don't expect them to have success in the Big Dance in the future either, because I feel like he's kind of proven what he is. We'd certainly like to kick him around on here, and this was a chance to do that. But I agree with you that Loyola Chicago is not your typical 11 seed, and the odds makers agree with that, obviously, or they wouldn't have been priced the way they have been. Tennessee gave themselves a chance to win by coming back there at the end of the game, so you give them credit for that. And then, that shot by Loyola fell, but honestly, that thing hit front rim, bounced up there, went all over the place, and then went in. Tennessee got a nice look at the end of the game. Both the Loyola games have had almost exactly the same score. It's been pretty interesting that it was, 62-61, they were trailing with just a few seconds left in both of those games, and then they made a three and made a two. So it's certainly been, seemed like a little bit, like they're a little bit of a team of destiny, and we'll see how they do going forward.
All right, so we'll go to the second most impressive and surprising thing here coming out of this past weekend. UConn's women's team with 94 in the first half against St. Francis. It's ridiculous what they're able to do.
Yeah, that's pretty insane, I have to say. I don't follow the women's game like I do the other, the men's game, but, UConn, every single year they do it, and I don't think we should be surprised anymore. They seem like they're on a mission based on the fact that, they lost last year. I'll be surprised if they lose this year.
Yeah, me too. It's crazy to think that they scored 94 points in the first half, and UMBC Kansas State yesterday had 93 points total in the entire game. It's just absolutely crazy. All right, I'm going to stop delaying the inevitable here. We finally got one. We got a 16-1, and of course it happens to be Virginia. And look, you and I talked about this team a lot, and we've talked about this team a lot with other guests here throughout the show as well. The style that they play, it's just not conducive to the NCAA tournament. And it works in the regular season, and maybe that's something that we need to examine a little bit more once we head on into next year and keep these segments going. But, look, I got to say, it's awesome for UMBC. It's absolutely fantastic. It was a great story. They capitalized on social media. They've done a brilliant job being in the spotlight and gave Kansas, I mean, it's an ugly game, but they gave Kansas State a game. They're in the round of 32. But, man, I can't help but feel so bad for Tony Bennett, who, I mean, this year's team, not only were they great defensively, they were one of the better offensive teams that he's had, too. And the formula just still wasn't enough.
Yeah, I certainly feel very bad for Virginia. You know, I've been rooting for a 16 seed to beat a one for a really long time. So I was really excited that it happened. I wish it would have happened to somebody other than Virginia, to be honest with you. You know, I don't think they'll get a chance as often as some of the other teams that have been one seeds consistently. And Tony Bennett's one of the classiest coaches you'll find. You know, I thought his interview after the game the other night was as good as anybody could do after just losing to a 16 seed and being the first one to lose that way. You know, Virginia, give them credit for a really good season. You know, we talked about it quite a bit that we were concerned that Virginia was one of those teams that, you know, those low possessions have to win, you know, close games all the time. I wasn't concerned that they would lose in the first round. So, you know, I won't say that I was thinking that could happen, but I still think it's always going to be dangerous for them playing that style. I'm not saying that they can't make a deeper run, but I think it's harder for them. I think some people have overreacted. I saw some people on my Twitter timeline talking about, you know, Tony Bennett should probably be fired for that. I think that'd be a terrible mistake. There'd be a lot of people that would really like to have Tony Bennett coaching them. You know, he's done a really good job with Virginia. Like I said, I think the way he handled that was really impressive. And, you know, UMBC, give them a ton of credit. They were just – that second half, I cannot believe that second half. You know, I sat there and watched the entire second half. It was 21-21 at halftime. UMBC scores 53 points on Virginia in the second half. You know, UMBC obviously really well coached as well by Odom. So, you know, it was a really nice story. I wish it would have happened to somebody other than Virginia.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you give a ton of credit to UMBC here, and I saw a really great tweet thread, and I can't remember exactly who had it now. I was trying to look it up while you were talking there. But, you know, one of the things that was really interesting was that Ryan Odom basically played Virginia's game in the first half and said, you know, we're going to keep this thing close. We're going to give ourselves a chance. And then in the second half, he turned it up to 11. I mean, they were running the floor. They were spreading the ball around. You know, and then Virginia just kind of got caught up and lost. I mean, they were sort of, I would say, shell-shocked, to be completely honest with you. And look, this is a UMBC team, and everyone's talked about this. They lost 83-39 to Albany during the regular season. They got beat by 28 by Vermont at home, beat them by 3 in the conference championship game to get to this point. I mean, this is, you know, no one would have expected this. And there's a reason why a 16 had never beaten a 1. But UMBC made adjustments. And as I'm watching this tournament, as we're going through here and, you know, looking at what's going on with all of these upsets and all this type of stuff, I mean, coaching, just it means so much here at this time of the year. I mean, it's not an accident that you've got a lot of really good coaches left here, and you've got coaches with teams that, you know, have talent, obviously, but coaches that really maximize. I mean, you look at a guy like Eric Musselman with Nevada. You know, I know Nevada trailed big in both of their games, and maybe they shouldn't be here, and you could certainly make that case for them, but you know, that's a coaching thing, to where a team never gives up, to where a team still looks for high percentage shots, to where a team, you know, buckles down as much as it can defensively. That's a coaching thing, because if you've got a coach that isn't a good head coach, you know, that's a guy who's going to say, well, we did everything we could, you know, shots just aren't falling for us. You know, not be that master motivator, not be that guy that could turn the tide here in a game. That's not to say that, you know, Shaka Smart and Mick Cronin are bad coaches because they couldn't hold leads. But it speaks volumes about Eric Musselman, what he can say to his team, and then, of course, you know, the guys that are the primary scorers for that team never giving up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Musselman's done a really good job. And what you said there in the middle of that, I think, is the most important point of that is Nevada, they never gave up, you know, and they're playing six guys. They're playing a ton of minutes every single game. It would have been really easy to pack it in, especially the second game here against Cincinnati. I mean, that's 22 points with 10 and a half minutes left in the game. I certainly thought the game was over. I think most people thought the game was over. I didn't watch it for a while, and then I came back and saw that they were winning by, or Cincinnati was winning by 6 points or something, and I watched the rest of the game. And You know, Nevada to keep fighting like that, I think it's really impressive. And, you know, especially when you have six guys playing that many minutes and playing a style that's, you know, I mean, they play up tempo. They're not going to just rest just because they have six guys. They're still playing the way they play normally. Very impressed with them. I think that, you know, Cincinnati blowing that lead, I think Mick Cronin's certainly going to catch a lot of heat around Cincinnati. I think he's already caught a lot of heat in past years, and this will not help at all.
Well, and this kind of brings up a whole different discussion, and it's kind of interesting to see the dichotomy, because you've got Cincinnati, who was in the AAC, and the AAC was not a good conference this year. I mean, SMU was way down, obviously. UConn is way down. Wichita State lost to Marshall in the first round. You know, so the AAC has certainly had its problems. I mean, Houston had an impressive run through the conference tournament, and then certainly, you know, playing well there in that game against San Diego State, but it was not a good conference. And, you know, then they run into this team that's really unlike anything that they see regularly in the AAC, certainly with the proficiency that Nevada has offensively, and it burns them. You know, and Cincinnati is a team that, you know, when you take teams like that out of their comfort zones, and this is why we probably see Virginia get bounced early year after year after year, when you take those teams out of their comfort zones, they don't have an answer. And for Cincinnati to not be able to salt that game away, when it should fit right into what they want to do, all they have to do is play defense for 10 and a half minutes, slow it down as much as possible. Like, that's what they should do. But I don't know if they got caught up in the emotions of March Madness or whatever it was. But, you know, that's something that maybe we need to take a deeper look at as well heading into next season, is, you know, starting to look at these conferences and where these teams are coming from, and, you know, being able to adapt to different styles of play and different, you know, situations. I mean, you don't play a pressure cooker game really in the AAC in the regular season. You know, at the SMU Cincinnati games last year were meaningful, and against Wichita State this year, but type of mindset when you get into March Madness. I mean, Cincinnati was relatively close to home in Nashville. It's about like a four-hour drive. Nevada coming all the way out from Reno. You know, everything should have set up well for Cincinnati here, and it didn't. And you kind of start trying to piece together the reasons why. Maybe it's just single game variance, and that happens here in this elimination format. But to see a team like Cincinnati, who shouldn't do that. You know, if you've got a team that plays fast all the time, like let's say you got Marshall with a 22-point lead, and they pissed down their leg against Wichita State, or if they had a big lead against West Virginia, something like that, you could get it. They don't slow the game down. They don't play much defense. They can't really pack away one of those leads. Cincinnati is the prototypical team to do it, and they couldn't do it. And it just makes you kind of wonder about this tournament in general.
Yeah, I think it's specifically in this situation. I think what you said about Nevada just being more capable on offense. You know, Nevada's sixth best offense as far as efficiency in the country. And Cincinnati is not used to playing against that in the AAC. Cincinnati did slow down the game. I mean, it was 64 possessions. That's the second slowest game Nevada's played all year. So it was played at Cincinnati's pace. And, I mean, they got that big lead. They slowed it down. I think that Cincinnati as a team thought when they were ahead by that, they could just shut it down. And, you know, they didn't have to do much on offense there at the end of the game. And then Jaron Cumberland, who had been their best offensive weapon there yesterday and against Georgia State, fouls out, which certainly didn't help them at all. But I think that they thought that, you know, they could just slow that game down. They had it. And they certainly got more cautious. And that's normal. But I think, like you said there, that I think it really hurt them that they've played the schedule that they have, because, you know, if you're Cincinnati and you're accustomed to playing a team like, you know, UCF or East Carolina or Memphis or whoever there in the American Athletic, other than Wichita State, nobody's very good on offense in that conference. So they're certainly not used to seeing somebody like Nevada, and I think that hurt them quite a bit.
Well, it was certainly a bad weekend for Cincinnati basketball, because Xavier then goes down to Florida State. And you know what, honestly, I mean, outside of the 16-1 with UMBC over Virginia, this is the most surprising outcome to me, Xavier and Florida State, because I just talked about coaching and the importance of coaching, and I don't think Leonard Hamilton is a very good coach. I think Chris Mack is a significantly better coach than Leonard Hamilton. And yet, here we are with Florida State advancing to the Sweet 16 as a 9 seed, two of them on that left side of the bracket. Everybody's bracket looks like a preschool art project right now. But for Florida State, I mean, that one stunned me. I know Xavier was probably overrated. I know a lot of people thought that about Xavier coming into this tournament here. I would have never imagined. If they lose to Gonzaga in L.A., I'm not the least bit surprised. The fact that Florida State caught them, that really did surprise me.
Yeah, it surprised me as well. You know, I thought that they would have lost to Gonzaga in the next game, but I certainly didn't expect them to lose to Florida State. Florida State's an interesting matchup, and we can talk about them in the future more, I'm sure. But Florida State here is a team that's really athletic. They have a ton of length. I mean, they've got a couple seven-footers, one of them 7'4". So, I mean, Florida State has a really unique team. They're a deep team. They're capable. They're very capable of pulling an upset like this. They haven't been very consistent. As you said, I don't think much of Leonard Hamilton. Chris Mack, I've always thought, was a really good coach. I'm surprised Xavier folded the way they did. I mean, at the end of that game yesterday, I was saying, man, it looks like they're trying to, you know, fall in the footsteps of Cincinnati. And I don't think you could say they choked quite as bad as Cincinnati did at the end of the game, but it was pretty bad. You know, I mean, Xavier really surprised me that they fell apart that way. And J.P. McCura fouling out for them didn't help. So, you know, you lost a top scorer, a top scoring option there right near the end of the game. But it seemed like they really tightened up at the end of that game. And just for the city of Cincinnati, a really rough night last night.
Well, that's a really good point you bring up about McCura falling out, because Trevon Blewett was not good in this game. And he wasn't all that great against Texas Southern either. And this is something that I look to capitalize on a little bit from a live standpoint, from a derivative standpoint, is, you know, you in this NCAA tournament, we've seen this with some teams here. I know Texas Tech has definitely been one with Keenan Evans, and they were one all year. But you look at Villanova, for example, in that game against Alabama. You know, and you've got DiVincenzo, who's really carrying them in the first half. Then all of a sudden Bridges wakes up, and that thing becomes an absolute blowout. So Villanova's got multiple guys to go to. When you look at other teams out here, they don't have that. I mean, Purdue, give Purdue credit for that gritty win over Butler without Isaac Haas. You know, I kind of worry if Texas Tech, Keenan Evans go into foul trouble in that Sweet 16 game, that may be a good opportunity to bet against the Red Raiders. You know, Duke has a lot of options. Does Texas A&M have a lot of scoring options if, you know, whoever their primary guy is struggles against Michigan? I don't know if that's the case. Gonzaga, we saw them against Ohio State. They have plenty of options. They have lots of guys that can score the basketball for them. So that's something I think is really important to keep an eye on here as you bet pregame for the Sweet 16 games and as you look to do some live and derivative stuff, is that you have to consider here what happens if a team has one or two guys that get into foul trouble. You know, if, for Nevada, if the Martin twins get into foul trouble, what happens to them against Loyola Chicago? Because every possession in that game is going to matter a ton. If Nevada has that foul trouble, we may have an 11 in the Elite Eight. You know, so that's something you really have to look at here in this tournament, especially because when you have these games that get down to the wire, and you look at it with Houston, for example, with Rob Gray, everything goes through Rob Gray. If Rob Gray is not on the floor or can't be as aggressive because he's got four fouls, I'm looking to play against Houston in that spot. You know, I'm looking for a live opportunity to go against them. And we've seen a lot of individuality in these first two rounds of games here so far. And I think that's kind of part of the reason why it's been as chaotic as it has, because some of these really good teams that were out there run through one or maybe two guys. And if one of those guys is off or both of those guys are off in this one and done format, you can forget it. And I think that's why we've had so many consistency issues nationwide in college basketball this year. You don't have a lot of great teams. You have a lot of great players. And that's not a recipe for a lot of success in March Madness, I don't think.
Yeah, I completely agree with all of that. I think that, you know, having so many options is why, to me, Villanova and Duke would be the two favorites right now. And I haven't really even looked at the odds, but I assume that they would be the two betting favorites right now. You know, Villanova and Duke have so many different scoring options. As you said about Villanova, I mean, they really have three elite scoring options that if one of them's off, you know, it's easy for somebody else to step up. You know, even for a team like Xavier, you know, you basically have Blewett and McCura. Blewett was kind of MIA, as you said last night. And then McCura fouls out, and they're left with, you know, at the end of the game, Cantor, who's a good player, shooting a three-point shot to try to tie the game. It's certainly not the shot they would have wanted. And, you know, it's certainly a big disadvantage to not have near as many options. And I think you're totally right that we have a lot of really good players in college basketball right now, but there aren't that many really good teams. And there's certainly a big difference there.
And I think we saw it, and I know that it wound up being a pretty close game there at the end, but that Florida-Texas Tech game, when Chioza was off the floor for Florida, they were a shit show on offense. And that's putting it nicely. They were awful on offense when he was off the floor. I mean, they had to rely on guys hitting contested threes to score any points whatsoever. And if you pick up on something like that in a live betting capacity, you know, then that's something that can really, really boost your bankroll quite a bit. And I think this tournament is really great for it because you're going to watch every game. You're going to watch the games that are on. You know, in a regular season, Thursday night for college basketball, maybe that's not the case. And you probably won't be able to pick up on as many live betting opportunities. But in this situation, if you're at a bar watching multiple games or you've kind of highlighted one game on the couch at home and you pick up on some of these things, they're absolutely fantastic for you to look at. So maybe we'll talk about some of those points here as we keep some of these Sweet 16 games in mind. Let's just run through all of them real quickly here in terms of the odds that are out for these eight games, and then we'll cycle back to some other talking points. Nevada, Loyola, Chicago, as we talked about already, every possession going to matter a ton in that game. Opener of 2.5 from bookmaker, down to 2 out there, pretty much market-wide at this point, total in the mid-140s. What do you think about this one?
I'll give off the percentages here real quickly on each of these as we go. 50% of the bets, so it's 50-50 on bets, 68% of the money on Loyola Chicago, which is why the number has gone down to 2. You know, obviously I haven't handicapped these games very in-depth, but my slight lean here to start with would be Nevada. I think Nevada getting some time off here for a few days certainly helps. Nevada has more scoring options in my mind than Loyola Chicago does. I also think that Nevada has a little bit of a coaching edge. Certainly Loyola's coach has done a really good job as well. But I like Musselman quite a bit. I think he's a master motivator. And Nevada, to have won the way they have in the first two games, has to give them a lot of confidence here. Loyola Chicago, to me, has played two teams that were overseeded, two teams that are not quite as good as their number 6 and number 3 seed. I think Nevada, you know, with the Martin twins and Jordan Caroline, I feel like they have some pretty good scoring options there. I would lean a little bit toward the under here in a, you know, 143.5. That's quite a few points for a game with Loyola Chicago. And I don't think that Loyola is going to want to run up and down with Nevada here.
No, I wouldn't think so either. And one thing that I think could provide a little bit of hidden value for Nevada, as you mentioned, you know, I mean, this is a team that doesn't run very deep. They basically play 6 guys. They had to spend a ton of energy coming back in both of their games. But they make the short trip here from Nashville to Atlanta. I doubt they went all the way back to Reno. I don't see anything on their official Twitter page. But I'm pretty sure that they wouldn't go all the way back to Reno for this. So they get to just kind of chill in the Southeast, go through some practices, you know, stay together as a team. Maybe Loyola Chicago goes home from Dallas before heading down to Atlanta. You know, so just adds a little bit more travel, because one of the things that you have to worry about here as we transition from this chaotic first weekend to the Sweet 16, I know this is a point that you brought up here as well. Upsets are great, but you know, maybe these don't really lend themselves to good games down the line. And I think one of the things that you can kind of look at here with teams like Nevada and Loyola Chicago, certainly a team like, you know, Florida State here, is that, you know, now you kind of sit around for 4 days, that momentum dies down, that adrenaline dies down a little bit, and you kind of go, all right, well, now we got to refocus. We have to get back into the right mindset. Whereas with these teams that have been there, done that, like a Villanova, Kansas, Duke, you know, Michigan, stuff like that, Syracuse, Gonzaga, you know, this is a situation that they're familiar with. They're used to, well, you know, we did what we had to do. Now we've got this long layoff. These other teams are like, wow, I can't believe we're still playing basketball. And they're just jumping around, can't calm themselves down. You know, that can be a real detriment to teams that aren't expected to be in this position, having to wait for 3 or 4 days to play again.
Yeah, certainly. And I do have some questions as to whether these games will be as good in some cases as what we saw before, because I love upsets. I really do. But, you know, I know some of my buddies that I talk to about March Madness say, I always get bummed when there are so many upsets, because I know that when you get to the Sweet 16, Elite 8, the games aren't going to be as good. And they certainly have a point. I mean, it certainly could happen here. I think this is a really interesting game, you know, Nevada and Loyola Chicago, just because it's two Cinderella stories against each other, basically. And I'm certainly interested in watching this one. Like I said, my lean initially here is to Nevada.
All right, let's move on to the next game here. So you got 7:07 Eastern time for the first one, 7:37 Eastern time for the second one. Texas A&M and Michigan. Michigan a 3-point favorite here. And the Wolverines did not look particularly impressive against either Montana or Houston. Those were tough, physical games. Good for them to advance. They have to go all the way out to Los Angeles now in this West region. Texas A&M, huge win, and as you and I were talking about yesterday, what was basically a road game for them in Charlotte over North Carolina. Man, I got to say, I was exceptionally impressed with Texas A&M. And this is where it's very interesting, because, like I said, Michigan didn't play well. And we hadn't seen Michigan in 2 weeks since they won the Big Ten Conference Tournament. Texas A&M looked phenomenal. Everybody watched that game because it was North Carolina. They blew them out, never really gave North Carolina a chance to get back into the game. This is one where I'm kind of looking at it going, look, I haven't watched much of A&M this year. I know they had the injuries and the suspensions and all that. I'm really surprised by how good they were. And I look at Michigan and I say, well, Michigan was really good for like a 4 or 5 week period when they were winning the Big Ten tournament, when they were making their push up the standings there. But you know, recency bias can really play into this game.
Yeah, I mean, this is a hard one. This is a really hard game. 56% of bets are on Texas A&M so far, and 60% of money on Texas A&M. Not really surprised. I think that, you know, we'll probably see more bets come in on Texas A&M than we will on Michigan here, because everybody just saw them beat down North Carolina. The thing that's really tricky here is Texas A&M has not played like this all year. You know, I talked about Texas A&M and felt like being a really high-ceiling team. And they showed it yesterday, but for most of the year, they didn't play very well. They played really well against West Virginia in Game 1. They went through a really long period where they were underachieving. So, you know, do you say, well, it was really nice of them to show up in such a big game, and you know, now they have momentum? Or do you say, you know, they could revert back to a little bit of what they've been in the past? And that's a really hard question to answer. I think it's interesting that the line's only 3. It looks like it opened 3.5 at Chris. You know, we'll see what happens with this line. Michigan is better than they played in the first couple games in this tournament, in my opinion. Having said that, I don't think this is a great matchup for Michigan. You know, Texas A&M has some really good bigs. You know, Michigan is a team that will probably not be able to match them when it comes to rebounding. I think Texas A&M is going to have to pretty big rebounding advantage here. And the fact that Michigan shoots free throws so poorly certainly hurts them. And I know they benefit from Houston's missed free throws the other day. And Michigan has shot free throws a little bit better than they did in the season. But Michigan's free throw worries are certainly a concern. I really don't know what I think about this game, to be completely honest with you. It's one where I think my initial lean would be to the under slightly. You know, as far as the side, I feel like you said, you could have recency bias in either direction here. It's a tough one.
It is a tough one. And I think John Beilein's a better head coach than Billy Kennedy. So, you know, part of me is kind of like, okay, do I want to take Michigan first half, expecting them to have a really good game plan here for this one? But then I also look at Texas A&M and say, well, there's a chance that athleticism just simply wins out in this game, because what they were doing to North Carolina was like stupid. It was incredible to watch. All their shots contested at the rim. And when we think about North Carolina, one of the things that traditionally helps them in ACC play is they're very good around the rim. Lots of offensive rebounds. They don't have to settle for the long jump shots. But Texas A&M's length kept them outside, along with the score. That obviously didn't help. But every shot in the paint was contested, every one of them. And if Michigan's not going to score easy baskets, you know, that's a big-time problem for them, because they're a decent team offensively, but they're certainly not great. They're definitely a better defensive team than they are offensive. So I don't know what to do with this game, as you mentioned. This may be one where you kind of wait around, see what it looks like from a live standpoint, and kind of go with it from there. But I do have a listener that reached out with a Texas A&M future at 100-1. You have to hedge it here, but what would be your strategy, you think?
I'd certainly hedge it. The question is how you want to hedge it. I mean, do you want to do pregame? Do you want to try to catch a run one way or the other in live betting? I think that this is a game that would surprise me if one team wins easily. So I think this would be a good option to live bet because I think there will be runs for each team. So if that's an option for you, I think this is one of those games that would set up to be that. You know, if you look at Texas A&M, who they'd be playing coming up, they'd have some, they'd probably play Gonzaga in the next game, and Texas A&M would probably be an underdog to Gonzaga. They would certainly be an underdog to Gonzaga. It's just how much. So you have to think about that. You know, how much do you want to hedge based on, you know, the fact that they're going to be underdog consistent times in a row? And also, like we talked about before, it depends on how much you put on this investment. I mean, you know, if it's a $5 investment and it's just a really small thing, then maybe you just let it go another round or you try to live bet it a small amount. If this is a significant investment, you know, say you put $50 on it or something like that, you have to hedge out. It's just a question of whether you want to do it pregame or during the game. I do think, like I said, that this game sets up as one that would make a lot of sense to do it in live betting.
Yeah, I think this is one, and you kind of want to get a feel for how you expect the game to go. And I don't think that this is a game where Texas A&M runs and hides, because I just think North Carolina is not very good defensively, and that was certainly on display in that game yesterday. I mean, Texas A&M just got down the floor, beat them in transition, had so many easy looks, and then, you know, used their physicality on the inside to get a lot of high percentage shot attempts. You know, Michigan, I think, is so much better defensively than UNC that I don't think that either team runs away and hides here in this game. So that's where you can maybe roll the dice a little bit, try to look for a live situation to hedge, you know, and get maybe a better price on Michigan than the -155, -160 or so it's being offered out there in the marketplace right now. All right, let's go to Kansas State and Kentucky. And Kentucky, 6.5-point favorite, depending on where you look. And the first thing that stands out to me about this game, Kyle, is this line looks light to me. And I know that maybe that's a public or square kind of perspective, but this thing looks light, man. I mean, it's in Atlanta. Kentucky's, you know, used to playing in that area, used to being in the Southeast. Kansas State, I mean, look, they didn't play well against UMBC. And as you mentioned in your email notes here, looked like they played down to the Retrievers. And it seemed to me like they were playing like a team that was terrified of losing that game. Because the last thing you want to do is, okay, 16 beat a 1. Oh, but now we let a 16 into the Sweet 16. So they looked like a team that was just playing not to lose, basically. And they were certainly lucky to escape there in that one. But I don't know. This line looks a little bit light to me.
This game definitely looks light. I almost played Kentucky right away last night, and I kind of held off because I thought maybe I had some recency bias. Full disclosure, I had Kansas State yesterday and lost with them. I thought that it was just a really bad spot for UMBC. It was. UMBC didn't play well yesterday. Kansas State played terrible. I mean, terrible is an understatement. It was really, really ugly basketball. I was watching that second half and saying, as good as this March Madness tournament's been, this one's no fun to watch, this UMBC and Kansas State game. If Kansas State plays the way they did yesterday, they're going to get run off the court by Kentucky. There's no doubt about that. But I'm certainly worried about having recency bias about what I just saw from Kansas State. And then maybe Wade plays in this game for Kansas State. That could make a big difference, certainly. Kentucky is rounding into form really nicely. I think that, you know, Buffalo was a good team. They proved that with their win over Arizona, and Kentucky dispatched them pretty easily there the other day. I know it was close for a while, but Kentucky's playing some good basketball right now. This line's going to go up. I mean, 76% of the bets are on Kentucky and 98% of the money's on Kentucky. Everybody has seen Kansas State there yesterday against UMBC, and they've seen Kentucky. I can't imagine this line going anything but up.
No, and this is one here that's pretty tough because I've got Kansas State at 500-1. I know that one of our listeners does as well. I'm kind of looking at this thing going, okay, do I really want to lay the -270 there on Kentucky? What I'm thinking I may end up doing here, and this is something you can look to do also with that hedge against Texas A&M in that Michigan game, I think I'm going to play Kentucky to win the national championship. You can get them out there right now at about plus 725. I know that's a low number relative to where they were coming into this tournament, but they're a favorite in the next round over whoever wins that game between Loyola Chicago and Nevada. You've got one of those two teams playing with a very quick turnaround. You've got Loyola, you know, I mean, obviously they've got God and Sister Jean on their side, but you know, you've got them in a situation where no one expected them to be. You've got Nevada in a quick turnaround with a small bench, you know, because as you mentioned, they only play six guys. So Kentucky's a favorite there in that one as well. So maybe I look to play that plus 725. That's my hedge on my Kansas State future at 500-1. Again, that's an opportunity that you can look for out there. You know, I know Michigan is plus 925. You know, for Michigan, it's maybe a little bit trickier. Maybe you'd rather do a money line rollover with their line against Gonzaga, probably being Gonzaga minus a couple of points there in that one. So those are opportunities that you do have. But to me, when I look at how this sets up for Kentucky in Atlanta, I've already got Kansas State playing Kentucky 725 or whatever the best line out there may be. As I start to look around at this one, that may be the way that I look to hedge instead of laying the minus 270 on the Wildcats.
I like that a lot. I think Kentucky plus 725 is a solid value. You look at their path right now, Kentucky has a real chance. It's a great opportunity for them, and they're playing some good basketball right now. I think Kentucky is probably the third most likely team to win it, in my opinion, behind Villanova and Duke, who, I mean, you might argue Duke is the most likely at this point based on their path versus Villanova's path. But I think that Kentucky would be the third most likely winner, and I think that's a really good way to hedge instead of laying that amount of money. And if you look at Kentucky, like you said, their next game would be a favorable matchup. And then, you know, say they play Gonzaga or Michigan in the Final Four, they're not going to be a big underdog to either of those teams, especially if they continue to play the way they have been. The books are not going to undervalue Kentucky. We know that. So you're going to have Kentucky in favorable matchups here going forward for a while. So I think that's a really good way to do it without having to lay a big price. I would worry about live betting this game to try to get out of a future with Kansas State, because I do think that there's certainly a chance that Kentucky could just run away and hide in this one.
Yeah, I think so too. And another thing is that, you know, as you mentioned there in passing, you know, I don't run into Villanova or Duke. I mean, I've got Kentucky in a very manageable situation now, playing probably either Michigan or Gonzaga. I mean, Texas A&M could very well knock off the Wolverines there in that one. But, you know, I mean, Kentucky, if they run into Texas A&M, you know, they've played them already. Gonzaga would be a tough matchup. Gonzaga is a very good team. But again, for me to hedge that plus 725, I don't have to do a whole lot there with that, because they'll maybe be a very slight dog. I can either hedge pregame or live hedge, something like that. So again, that's a consideration that you want to look to make here as well. And because of how the West, or because of how the left side of the bracket has shaken out, you know, Kentucky being a favorite over Loyola Chicago or Nevada, I mean, I'll take that plus 725. I'd probably let it ride if they beat Kansas State, and they should. Like I said, they're in Atlanta as well, so you got a little bit of hidden home court advantage there in that one. I think that makes a lot of sense, and the way the bracket sets up allows us to do that. And it's even harder to do that in the West region, because, you know, Gonzaga should win, but it's a tough game against either Michigan or Texas A&M. You know, so they're not really a great option to do that with, even though they're plus 825. So I think you've got, you know, kind of this perfect storm situation here for the Wildcats in the South region. One more game to talk about for Thursday night, Florida State, Gonzaga, this number 5.5 or 6 out there. And again, I'm going to say the same thing I said about that Kentucky game. This line looks a little bit light to me too.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, and I'm sitting here thinking I'm liking too many favorites here. I don't like, you know, liking every single favorite, but Gonzaga is better than Florida State. And I know Mark Few is a lot better coach than Leonard Hamilton. There's no doubt about that. I think this line's going to go up. You got 51% of the bets on Gonzaga, 65% of the money on Gonzaga. I think if you like Gonzaga, you better go ahead and take it pretty soon. Florida State has not had any kind of consistency throughout the course of the season. Florida State, you know, here is going to be a long way from home. Gonzaga has, you know, a bit of a home court advantage, certainly. And Gonzaga's fans travel really well, so it may be a bigger home court advantage than you would think. I think this will be an up-and-down game. I mean, the total is 154 points, and that makes sense to me. Both of these teams are good on defense, so I'd be a little bit worried about taking over a high number like that. But Gonzaga is a better team. They have more scoring options, something you just said a few minutes ago. Gonzaga has a lot of different scoring options, you know. If Hachimura is playing the way he was there against Ohio State, Gonzaga is going to be really hard to beat. I thought that Ohio State played really well in the second half of that game the other day. Gonzaga, to respond to their run the way they did, I think that was a really good test for Gonzaga. And Florida State's not as good as Ohio State was, in my opinion. And Florida State, like I said, has not had any kind of consistency. Gonzaga is really good both on offense and defense. Florida State is decent on offense and decent on defense. But to me, this is one of those spots where Gonzaga has a lot more options than Florida State does. Gonzaga is really good on the glass. I think Gonzaga will win the rebounding battle here. Florida State, for as tall as they are, really struggles with defensive rebounding, and I think Gonzaga is going to get a lot of second-chance points here. The only way I could take this side would be Gonzaga. I can't take Florida State. I don't know if I'll weigh the points, but that's certainly my lean.
Yeah, I mean, I may look to lay it because I think this number is going up, and you know, this is one of those where I don't even know if I'm going to get an in-game in-game opportunity because Mark Few is just so much better than Leonard Hamilton. If this was a Thursday to Saturday turnaround, then maybe I could see this number being 6. But you've got Gonzaga with a shorter travel, better coach, and additional time to prepare for Florida State. And it's not like Gonzaga's a small team. I mean, Gonzaga's got some pretty decent size there on the interior as well. They've got veteran leadership. They've got freshman enthusiasm and scoring. That's a pretty complete team. And the reason I played Ohio State in the second half was because, you know, I just figured Chris Holtmann would do something to fix things defensively, much like he did in that first game against South Dakota State. I played Ohio State in the second half in both games and won both of those here so far in the tournament. Gonzaga, you know, will have the coaching advantage throughout this game. And with extra time to prepare, with halftime adjustments, with the late tip-off, that's another thing too. Not only does Florida State have to go all the way out to California, they have to play a 10 o'clock game. And I know they're young kids and so on and so forth and whatever, but to me, that still means something here. To have to play a game out in the Pacific time zone when you haven't done it probably all year. I mean, maybe they played one very early in the non-conference, but that's a significant hindrance, I think, to Florida State. So I look to take Gonzaga here in this one. And like you, I do think this number does go up. So let's go to Friday. Clemson and Kansas. And here's another one, man. I hate being so chalk-heavy and seeming like I'm, you know, Joe Sixpack, Mr. Public here, but Kansas is 3 hours away from home again. I talked about this last week, playing in Wichita, huge home court advantage. Now they play in Omaha. It's 3 hours from Lawrence. I don't think Clemson's going to travel for this one. They make it to the Final Four. They're in San Antonio, so they stay relatively regional anyway. I don't think there's any home court advantage built into this number, and there should be.
Yeah, I'm surprised that is where it is. I don't know if I like laying the points with Kansas as much as I like some of those others. Kansas, to me, has been pretty inconsistent. I mean, Kansas has lost some games at home this year that, you know, you wouldn't expect them to lose. This is a Kansas team that I think has quite a few flaws. I mean, they're certainly a good team, but they have more flaws than a normal number one seed would have. So the question here, though, is what do you think about Clemson? You know, I have a Clemson future, and I'm certainly going to hedge pretty heavily in this one because I do think Kansas is going to win. I just worry about the spread. You know, you got 4.5 in most books now. This one probably goes up some more. Kansas is getting 65% of the bets, 84% of the money so far. This one's been pretty heavily bet so far as well. So a lot of people like Kansas. I think this line will probably keep going up. I don't know if I want to lay the points for a pregame wager. I think this would be one of them where if Clemson jumps off to an early lead and you can get Kansas money line at a good price or Kansas -1, something like that. I think that would make sense. You know, Kansas certainly has a big home court advantage here, and that should make a big difference here.
Well, and the difference here, Kansas also +725. These numbers are coming from Five Dimes. I'm talking about for the futures to win the national championship. The difference here is obviously Kansas runs into Duke, and +725 loses a lot of equity when you play Duke. When you're Kentucky and you're +725 and you run into the winner of Loyola Chicago and Nevada, doesn't lose nearly as much equity. One thing I think is really interesting about the line for this game, when we talk about recency bias here, Clemson was supposed to lose to New Mexico State. I know they were favored. They were a 4-point favorite. They may have closed 3.5 at some places. But a lot of people had that as that trendy 12-over-5 upset pick. So a lot of people thought Clemson should lose that game. The books obviously had Clemson favored, but that was a line that was moving down in the lead-up to the game. Then Clemson goes, and in a pick-em situation against Auburn, virtually a pick-em situation, they shoot as well as they possibly can, win that game by 31. So a lot of people are probably thinking to themselves, oh, I might have been wrong about Clemson. You know, they beat this trendy 12-over-5 upset pick, covered the number comfortably too, by the way, then blow out Auburn, who was, you know, maybe you could say Auburn was the best team in the regular season in the SEC if you want to. So I think that's why this line opened where it did. And I think the market is going to correct this number. I think going from 4 to 4.5 is just the start of the correction that we're going to see. I'm guessing Kansas closes 6-ish in this game, something like that. And I think that's a more accurate representation of the two teams.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they probably close 5.5 or so. So we're really close there. I think that, Kansas money is going to continue to come in. If you like Kansas, you want to take them now. If you like Clemson, you want to wait it out. As far as the total, at 143, Clemson is going to want to slow this game down. But Kansas is a lot better on offense than they are on defense this year. It's certainly tricky to take Kansas unders right now.
All right, well, let's look at the next game here coming up on Friday. And again, same time format, 7:07 Eastern, then 7:37 Eastern for this one. West Virginia, Villanova. Villanova favored by 5.5. Underseeded West Virginia draws who I think is the best team in the tournament, the team that's currently favored to win it. I mentioned how impressed I was with their win over Alabama, and some people may look down on it because Alabama was a 9 seed, but once Villanova got going, nothing could stop them. This game is fascinating to me. You've got this Villanova team, shoots a ton of threes, does so with high efficiency. You know, they kept harping on the fact that Villanova shoots a bunch of threes in that game against Alabama, and I don't know if it was Reggie Miller or whoever it was, just kept going on and on about it. And it's like, there's a big difference between shooting a contested three and standing there from 25 feet away with nobody in front of you. The amount of open threes that Villanova took in that game was staggering. That is such a high percentage shot, a high return on investment shot now in both college basketball and the NBA to shoot those open looks from three. I have no problem with Villanova bombing away. In this game, it's all about how they handle that press Virginia defense.
Yeah, this game is probably my favorite game as far as a fan. You know, this is must-see TV. Villanova, I think, is the best team in the tournament. I think this is a really tricky matchup. Would it surprise me if Villanova loses this game? No, not very much. I think that West Virginia is one of those teams that it would surprise me if they won the tournament. But they can beat anybody, especially with that style that they play. West Virginia will have to make enough shots, though, because I think Villanova will make a decent amount of those shots. I mean, it doesn't bother me if Villanova shoots quite a few threes if I'm rooting for Villanova. They have 5 guys on the team that have shot 39.1% or better from three-point range. 3 of them shoot 42% or better from three-point range. So these guys are really good at threes. And like you said, if they're open, they're excellent at three-point shots. West Virginia has been a good offense this year. They've been a lot better on offense this year than they have in the past few years. One of their biggest strengths on offense is offensive rebounding. But still, I think West Virginia is at a significant disadvantage offensively against Villanova. I don't think anybody could contest that point. But I think Villanova will make enough shots here and score enough points that West Virginia is going to have to knock down some of those jumpers. I see this total is moving up. I think that makes some sense. I think that, in general, the Sweet 16 has been good for unders, with it being the first game at a venue. And then the Elite Eight has been better for overs. But I think that this 153 number was a little bit too low when it started because West Virginia is not going to slow this game down. Villanova shoots so well, the best offense in the country. As far as the side, I don't know. I'm not going to take the side in this one. I think 5.5 is a really good number. I lean a little bit to the over, but more than anything, I'm just really looking forward to this game.
Let's go ahead and talk about those numbers with the overs and unders here. I know you got some interesting stats that you want to point out. I think now is a good time to do it just to make sure that we get them on the broadcast here as I continue to lose track of time when we talk about college basketball. But I know you've got some good over-under numbers to talk about here for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. So as you sort of touched on them there momentarily, let's go ahead and dive into them a little bit more.
Yeah, I looked at the time myself and couldn't believe that we've been on here this long already. Certainly get excited talking about basketball this time of the year. But 56-46 the under in the Sweet 16 since 2005. So in 102 games, 56 unders, 46 overs. Not a huge trend, but I think that makes sense that the under would have more value in the first game at a new venue. Underdogs are 51-48-3 ATS. I think, interestingly, teams who have covered 50% of the time on the year or less are 36-20 ATS. So these are teams that are likely undervalued because they have not covered the number as much throughout the course of the season. They've been good at covering numbers. This is really kind of a general thing to keep in mind for the NCAA tournament going forward. It's a lot more dangerous to take a team that's covered 65% of the time throughout the course of the season than it is to take a team that's covered 45% of the time throughout the season. You can catch some teams that are maybe undervalued because they had a bad run, maybe a team like Texas A&M, a team that has a lot of potential, but then they didn't show it consistently, and I think that's what that number would point out. As far as I'll go ahead and say the Elite Eight as well. The Elite Eight since 2005, the over 31-21. We see this in the splits in the round of 64 and round of 32, and then we see it again in the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. The under has more value in the first game. The over has more value in the second game, and I think this makes a lot of sense. Once a team is accustomed to the arena, the over is going to have more value in that second game. You saw a ton of really low-scoring games in the round of 64, especially in the first half. I know first-half unders were just killing it. I would lean the first-half unders again here in the Sweet 16. I wouldn't lean to the first-half unders near as much in the Elite Eight. Also in the Elite Eight, underdogs 31-20-1. So underdogs have certainly done well, ATS in the Elite Eight. So those are the numbers that I think I know I've had some people reach out. These numbers are really helpful. So nice to be able to share these again today.
Yeah, I think the under 28-20 here so far in March Madness. And one of the other things that one of my listeners pointed out is that free throw shooting has been atrocious in this tournament as well. And that certainly helps for those that are looking to play the under. All right, we'll get back to the games that are coming up here on Friday. And let's go with this Syracuse and Duke game. And, obviously a lot of people can have a mea culpa about Syracuse here. And this is one of the things about this tournament. And the reason why, while we scoffed about Syracuse last week, while we talked about how they really have no business being in the tournament, they're a very dangerous tournament team, because if you shoot bad against Syracuse, you lose. It's that simple. They play that zone. They play it very, very well. And we saw two teams shoot very, very badly against Syracuse. That's what happens. TCU, 52 points. Michigan State, 53 points. They missed, 604 shots in the second half of that game to lose that one to Syracuse. I think they missed literally their last 14 shots from the field or something like that. Syracuse got outplayed badly in that box score. But here they are moving on to play Duke, a Duke team that held them to 44 points in the regular season. So, laying 11.5 here with the Blue Devils is probably not an ideal situation, but what do you see from this game?
Well, first of all, you have to give Syracuse credit for getting to this point. I still think that Syracuse's body of work would suggest they shouldn't have made the tournament, but hey, they've made the most of it once they've gotten here, and they've done this many times. Boeheim's a good coach. He coaches them well this time of the year. There's no doubt about that. And this matchup zone is unique. It's difficult. I don't want to lay 11 points here, 11.5 points, but I think Duke's going to win this game. I really don't think that the matchup zone is going to work well enough against Duke. Duke has too many really good shooters, and Duke is the number one offensive rebounding team in the country. Syracuse has serious defensive rebounding problems. Michigan State had, almost 30 offensive rebounds yesterday. And, they just couldn't make a shot. They had 29 offensive rebounds yesterday. That's really mind-boggling that you could have 29 offensive rebounds. And I know you said this to me yesterday by text, but it really is. You can sit there and stare at that Syracuse-Michigan State box score and wonder what happened. That's one of the most confusing box scores you could ever see. Syracuse was 1 of 8 on threes, 14 of 34 from two-point range. They gave up 29 offensive rebounds and they won. It's hard to believe. But Syracuse has been able to do things like that many times in the past. I don't have a strong lean on the on the side here. I would probably lean to the under. Syracuse has to ugly up this game, so I guess the way I'd say it. They don't want a high-scoring game against Duke. Duke playing that zone, and it's going to be a slower tempo than it has been in the past because Duke is now playing a zone as well. So two teams playing a zone against each other, that usually means a slow tempo. My lean here would be the under, but I do think Duke will knock off Syracuse. It's just that's a really big price to pay.
To be totally honest with you, I'm kind of perplexed by the total for this game. It's up in the low 130s, 133.5, 132. When these two teams played on February 24th, it was a 60-44 real thriller there in that one. So I don't know if it's maybe because you don't really expect a foul fest when you've got a team that's a double-digit favorite here in this situation. The total was 142.5 for the regular season game. So I guess in that respect, we have seen a very significant adjustment of about 10 points now at this point. But still, it seems like it would take a long time for Syracuse to get to a point where they could actually go over the total in this game. But again, I mean, those are things you want to look at is that we have that regular season matchup. And that was my initial thought was, well, Duke's playing a zone now, so they're going to slow this game down. We know what Syracuse wants to do slowing this game down. You just brought up that trend that you were talking about, the first game in the Sweet 16, in terms of games going under the total. So you've got that in play as well. But this one has adjusted 10 points from the total that we saw when these two teams first played. So the adjustment has been made, and that's something you really want to keep in mind is that, like I said, it looks high, but the adjustment's been made, and the adjustment's been made to that point for a reason. So it's really not like you're getting significant line value on it, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I would take the under or pass here, but, I have to admit that getting 10 points worse is certainly discouraging. One point I wanted to make is that something I've found here in the past is that Coach K's teams, when they have a big lead, if Duke is ahead by a decent amount here at halftime, that second half under has some serious value. I looked this one up the other day. I wish I had it here really quick now, but I know the second half under has done really well in game four, Duke's way ahead. Duke is a team that will shut it down at the end of the game, not run up the score as much as they could. You saw that against Rhode Island the other day. You saw that against Iona. Both of those second-half unders cashed, even though Duke was shooting lights out. So keep that in mind when you look at Duke games. If they happen to be way ahead at halftime, I like the second-half under.
One more game to talk about here, and then we'll try to spend just a few quick minutes on the NIT, CBI, and CIT. I don't want to keep you too long here. I know you got lots of things going on here this week. This is a good game. Texas Tech and Purdue. Purdue, a 1.5-point favorite. We see Chris going down to 1-113 on this one here as we're talking. This line obviously assumes that Isaac Haas will not play. If Isaac Haas does, if he's announced that he will play, I don't think we find out anything until Friday on that, until we get to the shoot around or something like that. But if it's announced that he will play, we'll probably see this one go up, maybe 2.5, 3 range, something like that. But right now, based on what I'm looking at in this line, it assumes that Haas won't play.
Yeah, I think it assumes that Haas won't play, and that's what I would assume. You can see a video online of him trying to shoot before the game with that big brace on. He's really having a hard time. I would be surprised if he could play. If he does, he certainly is not going to be the same as he's been in the past. This one's really interesting as far as the bet percentages and money. 65% of the bets are on Purdue so far, but 67% of the money is on Texas Tech. So we see that some of the early sharp money taking Texas Tech. I can't blame them. I think Texas Tech is the better defense here, and Purdue now without one of their main offensive weapons. As long as Evans is healthy, I think this one sets up pretty well for Texas Tech. So I guess it's finally one of those where I didn't like a favorite. I think I lean a little bit here to Texas Tech +1.5. I think that, Purdue hasn't proven it in the tournament. Matt Painter still has to prove that he can win these big games in the tournament. Purdue almost gave away that game yesterday against Butler at the end. Texas Tech, good defense, good enough offense. Their big problem here in this game would have been Isaac Haas. I know they have Harms. Harms isn't the same player that Haas is. He's a good shot blocker. He's not near the offensive force that Haas is. So the other thing you could say is it probably makes it a lower scoring game when Haas isn't involved. So My leans here would be Texas Tech and the under.
Yeah, and this is one for me. I don't really have to do anything with this game. I've got both of these teams in the futures market. I've got Purdue 40 and 38 to 1. I've got Texas Tech 125 to 1. About the same profit potential on both of them here at this point. So I'm just kind of free rolling in this one. I guess I'm hoping West Virginia probably beats Villanova. I'd rather not run into Villanova in the Elite Eight because, you know, I'll get a better line there with West Virginia. I mean, that should be something around a pick 'em. Maybe West Virginia a small favorite, depending on, you know, who they draw on that one and if Haas does wind up playing on Friday. So I'm just going to kind of sit back, watch and enjoy this one. Maybe I'll look to do something live with it. I do have more of an investment in Purdue, obviously, with the smaller odds from a future standpoint. So maybe that'll dictate what I do, but I'll just kind of get to sit back and watch and enjoy this one. And, you know, it should be a pretty good game. Both these teams playing some close games here in the round of 32, and I would expect nothing less on this matchup. So let's chat NIT, CBI, CIT here for a couple of minutes just to get some stuff out there about those. Big card here tonight in terms of those other tournaments. You got 9 games on the slate this evening. A few teams, as I mentioned in the first segment on today's show, that aren't traditionally lined, so you don't want to go too crazy here while you're so eager to get back into betting after a busy college basketball weekend. Anything you're seeing about these tournaments? Anything you want to point out?
Well, I'll tell you a really strong lean I have that I might make as a personal play here tonight. I'm not sure if it's going to be a premium play of mine. Sometimes I just play some on my own that are smaller bets. I like Utah some here tonight against LSU. Utah -4.5 now. It was 4. This one is going to go up more, both the bets and the money, pretty heavily toward Utah here. I think this is a difficult spot for LSU because LSU played that game against Louisiana Lafayette, their last game. That was a very, very heated game. You can look at the press conference afterwards, Will Wade's press conference. That's some interesting, 10, 15 minutes there if you have time to look up that one. But that was a really heated game. Will Wade called a timeout with maybe 10 seconds left or something against Lafayette when the game was already over and started shouting something at Lafayette's coach that, enjoy this one because Lafayette, Bob Marlin had talked bad about LSU before the game. So I think both coaches were kind of in the wrong there because, Will Wade kind of stooped to his level, but at the same time, you kind of don't blame them based on the way things came out before the game. So I think, though, that was a game that, that was really, really a lot of emotion in that game. Now LSU takes a really long trip to play in altitude against a Utah team that has a really good home court advantage. So to me, I think 4.5 points is a little bit short in that one. That would be one of my stronger leans as far as the side here tonight.
Anything you've noticed in terms of the NIT going with the quarters instead of the halves?
Yeah, I've tried to follow this pretty closely because I was being really cautious, not knowing what to do with the NIT rule changes. The 3-point shooting percentages are down a little bit with the line being moved back. Last week when we talked about this, it was just kind of one of the things that I just said off the top of my head. I wondered if it would make a little bit more scoring. I think that it's, it has held it down some from what the CBI and CIT would be. So if you want an over, I think you want the CBI or CIT overs more than you want an NIT one because there are things that would limit scoring some in the NIT where they don't have that in the CBI or CIT. It's all just faster paced. Nobody's going to care as much. So, the quarters, I don't know what to think. There's no 1-1 anymore, but at the same time, you get in a double bonus with only 5 fouls. So what it does mean is that fourth quarter can be really high scoring. I got burned with that one time last week with Washington and Boise State, a really, really bad beat on the under. You can rack up the points in a hurry with both teams in the double bonus early at the end of the fourth quarter because then you're saying, okay, well, both teams are fouling pretty quickly or one team's fouling nonstop trying to catch up. It adds up pretty quickly because, you watch the end of these games and you see guys miss the front end of them 1-1 many times. If they miss the first shot here, they still get a second free throw. So I think that's pretty important as far as totals late in the game. You can have some games that are really low to start with that go up quite a bit at the end. I haven't done first or second half betting or, you know, quarter betting in the NIT. I don't even really know what's available there. But I do think that the NIT rule changes have affected some teams more than others. I think you want to go more with teams who aren't so reliant on the three-point shot, because moving it back 20 inches doesn't sound like a lot, but it is certainly enough to change the percentages. So I like teams that are a little bit more aggressive going to the hoop. And still, I think we're still at the point in these smaller tournaments to where motivation means everything. You know, this is just the second game for most of these teams. And some of these teams still, I don't think they're very motivated to be here. And I think there are other teams that really want to be here. So as of now, I think we're still at that motivation level in these tournaments.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, once we get to a certain point here, as we get a little bit deeper, you know, teams are just going to say, well, we've played this long, let's just win the damn thing. So right. We haven't necessarily gotten to that point yet. One thing I do want to mention here in terms of the CBI, I look for a lot of bad travel spots in the CBI and look to take advantage of some of those. We really don't have any here tonight. I mean, we've got Mercer playing North Texas. North Texas went up to South Dakota, won that game in Sioux Falls. It was a game I mentioned last week on the show. They come back home and host Mercer. Mercer was out at Grand Canyon last week. Now they got to go back out to Denton. But still, that's not that bad of a situation. If San Francisco was playing at Utah Valley, maybe we'd have one there with that. But that game is at the War Memorial in San Francisco. New Orleans and Campbell, that's not that bad going from Louisiana to North Carolina. Then Jacksonville State and Central Arkansas, relatively close to each other. So you know, that's not really a bad situation there in that one either. So, you know, again, it takes away a little bit of the advantages that I look for when it comes to these postseason tournaments. But Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com, what's you got going on over there right now, man?
Busy time of the year, obviously. Sign up for the free picks newsletter if you haven't already at huntersportspicks.com. I'll be sending out a free pick here this week for the Sweet 16. Also, I've lowered my prices, obviously, with not near as much time left in the basketball season, especially college basketball season. $119 if you're looking for totals only. That includes all the NIT, CBI stuff, and then all the way through the end of the season. If you're interested in that, KyleHunterSportsPicks.com or at KyleHunterPicks on Twitter.
Kyle, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for hanging on while we ran long here again today, and talk to you again next week.
That sounds good. Thanks, man.
Good stuff there on today's show with Kyle Hunter from HunterSportsPicks.com. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be joined for a short segment with Brian Blessing. He's actually got to take off a little bit early and do a segment for NHL Network Radio on SiriusXM. So he's going to big time us a little bit at the end of today or at the end of tomorrow's segment, which is totally fine. I certainly don't blame him for that, and it's great that he's a resource for us here on the show. Then second half of the show, we'll have Tony George from Doc Sports join us Wednesday. We'll bring back Brian Leonard. We'll talk some baseball with him. Also, Wes Reynolds. Two golf events this week, and the one in Punta Cana, Tony Romo going to tee it up in that one. So pretty interesting angle to consider there. With that, and then the other one is the match play event, the Dell Match Play down in Texas, a different type of format, obviously, so we'll have some things to talk about with that. Thursday, Brad Powers and Rolf Michaels as we talk Sweet 16. We'll also forecast some Elite Eight lines so you can get a little bit of an idea with those. And then Friday, hoping to get Philip Ross and Reich, do a little bit of NBA content, and then we'll see what else we get along the way. But Friday's show will be pre-recorded, so keep that in mind. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.